www.lifeimitations.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. On the first part of today's program, we're going to speak with investigative reporter Dan Christensen with the Florida Bulldog. For several years, the Florida Bulldog website has been trying to uncover what the FBI knew about a mysterious Saudi family that left Sarasota just prior to 9/11. And just last week, a federal judge ruled the FBI unlawfully withheld from the Florida Bulldog key sections of records of its investigation of a Saudi family that fled Sarasota 2 weeks before the 9/11 attacks, leaving behind cars, clothes, furniture, food, and other belongings. We're going to talk with Dan Christensen next here on WMNF. And Dan, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Well, so let's just kind of set the scene. For years, you've been trying to uncover a mystery surrounding 9/11. What's the mystery?
Well, the mystery is what the FBI found when it investigated this family of Saudis that were living in Sarasota in the Prestancia development prior to 9/11. They had moved out. The FBI was called in by neighbors shortly after the attacks when and informed that these people had moved out abruptly. They'd left behind virtually all their possessions appeared to be running out shortly before the attacks, as if they knew what was happening. The FBI went in, they looked at all this, but they never told either Congress, which investigated 9/11, that was what was called a joint inquiry into 9/11 by both the House and the Senate, which was co-chaired by former Florida Senator Bob Graham. They also did not tell the 9/11 Commission about this. And my colleague, Irish author by the name of Anthony Summers, first got onto this when he spoke with a law enforcement person in Florida. And we ended up, writing a story about this as a result. It's been, it was in 2011, 10 years after this. We went to Senator Graham, told him about this. He was rather perturbed, shall we say, that he didn't know anything about this. And FBI at the time said there was nothing to this. Said they looked at it, and there was no connection to the 9/11 plot. Well, we filed a Freedom of Information Act request, after a year went by and they stonewalled us, we filed a lawsuit that was in federal court in Fort Lauderdale. And after many years now, initially we got a few documents that were contrary, showed information that was contrary to what the FBI's position was. Those documents said that there were, quote, many connections, unquote, between the Sarasota Saudis and people who were involved with 9/11. The documents were heavily censored on the basis of national security and for other reasons. So that's, pretty much all we had initially. So as the lawsuit progressed, we obtained other information about this, we actually had a second lawsuit that was involved in all this. We got to the point where we had been waiting on the judge in Fort Lauderdale, Judge Locke, to rule. It took 8 years, but he finally did. Or 7 years, excuse me, that's what he ruled earlier this month, was he gave us some and he did not give us some. For instance, one of the big, most noteworthy things about this was that the FBI acknowledged that the early on, that they had turned over 80,000 pages of 9/11 material from their Tampa field office for the judge to inspect privately in his chambers. Those 80,000 pages were not released by the judge. We haven't decided if we're going to go back in and ask him to open those documents up. It will depend on whether we think we have a chance of prevailing. We may also have to file a new Freedom of Information request about that. Anyway, the stuff that we did get, though, we have not yet seen, because there's appeals that, may be coming from the FBI on this, and this, the judge has stayed his order pending the appeal time. There were several different portions of the documents that have been released before that were classified for various reasons. The judge said that these couple of these seemingly important paragraphs should be opened up to us. What they say, we're not quite sure yet. We have some suspicions, but I don't think it would be appropriate to discuss what we think might be there. But we're hoping that we will find out, and we're hoping that they're going to shed some new light on this. And all this comes at a very important time, I think, because up in New York, there's a huge lawsuit going on up there in which the 9/11 victims, both survivors and the relatives of those who died, and also various businesses and things that lost money as a result of the attacks, are suing Saudi Arabia, claiming that they were behind this. And a document that Florida Bulldog obtained in the course of this litigation is now at the center of that. It was an October 2012 FBI summary report that we got back in 2016, and it talks in there about not the Sarasota angle, but what was happening out in California back prior to 9/11. And that's where some of the hijackers entered the country, and they got assistance from various people there, notably Saudis with connections to the government. And in this particular document, two of those people whose names had already come out via other ways were named, but the person that the FBI document says tasked these two people with helping the hijackers, that name has been withheld. And that, like I said, is sort of at the center. The lawyers up there are trying to get this document released in full so they can identify who this person is, because it's believed to be a Saudi official. And if it is, that is a very significant thing to have pinned down here.
I mean, that would be a smoking gun to tie the Saudi government to the 9/11 hijackers?
It could be, depending upon who the person is and what kind of authority they might have.
So we don't know the name of that person. Now I understand from your website, floridabulldog.org, that U.S. Attorney General Barr is going to decide whether the name of this very person is a state secret, and he has until Friday to make that determination.
Exactly. So I'm kind of waiting to see what happens here, and we will be reporting something on it. We don't usually publish over the weekend. We publish during the week, so probably something would run Monday or Tuesday. Well, and as soon as we find out, we'll let everybody know.
We're talking with Dan Christensen. He is an investigative reporter for floridabulldog.org. I'm sorry, Dan, I cut you off.
That's okay. I was just about to say we are expecting the Attorney General to invoke state secrets, keep the name secret, because that's what the FBI has been trying to do all along here. However, it's possible he won't, and the name will come out. But from my vantage point, looking at all this, it seems to be here that, the position that the Attorney General takes might suggest here that this name is a government official. Why else would they, consider this a state secret? And if that's indeed the case, if you start thinking this through, you realize it has to be for one of two reasons. either to avoid embarrassing the Saudis, or more likely, it suggests to me that there is an agreement here by the United States that they've entered into some sort of agreement not to release information that would implicate Saudi government officials in the 9/11 attacks. And if that's the case, that opens all, raises all sorts of questions as to why they're doing that.
Well, our guest Dan Christensen is an investigative reporter. He formerly worked at the Miami Herald. He's now with a website that I think you founded, right, Dan? FloridaBulldog.org?
Yeah, I'm afraid after I got laid off by the Herald back in 2009, as part of the continuing meltdown of local newspapers in the state, that's what I, you know, that's what I did. I founded the Bulldog.
Well, it's a great investigative website. Dan has been looking into whether or not there is a Saudi government connection to the 9/11 hijackers. He's been on this case. He's been studying this story for years and years. And as you heard, he's got several lawsuits trying to uncover the documents. Do we have any reason to believe right now that Saudi government officials had ties to the hijackers? Is there any paper out there that would show that, any document that would show that? And is there any document that would show that the hijackers visited this mysterious couple that lived in Prestancia in Sarasota in 2001?
Well, we have been told by our initial source on this, and another gentleman who used to be a security official with Prestancia, he was also a resident there, and that yes, indeed, that material they have gated. You know, it's a gated community. They take photographs of license tags, and you have to sign in all that. And those records were turned over to the FBI. The FBI later, however, said they never collected those records. So, you know, that's kind of where we stand on that. We're up in the air. It would seem certainly that the FBI collected those records because that's basic law enforcement 101.
And the security person says that he thinks one of the hijackers may have visited the family at Prestancia?
They said that the license tags came back to Muhammad Atta and others, and also, you know, the sign-in logs show that they visited the home where the Saudi couple lived on several occasions.
What about documents tying anybody within the Saudi government or with ties to the Saudi government to the hijackers themselves?
I'm not aware of anything personally,
okay, right.
But there's a lot of stuff happening out there now, especially in the New York litigation, where they've received some information that, that they have indicated is helpful to their position on this. But I don't know. Is there a smoking gun yet? I don't know. What's interesting here in this particular case is that the this couple, it was Abdulaziz and Anoud Al-Hiji, Anoud is the wife. Her father owned the house, and her father has ties to the royal family. He used to work for one of the princes directly, who was an heir to the throne, which opens up, you know, all sorts of possibilities here.
Well, we're talking with Dan Christensen about his ongoing investigative reporting on the possible Saudi government connection to the 9/11 hijackers, and you're listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. Have you talked to Senator Graham about this, and what does he say about the government's reluctance to turn over these documents?
If you talk to him, he says that the FBI is covering up what happened here, and he says it happened with them when he was co-chairing the Congress's inquiry into this. He said that the FBI, you know, did not provide access to informants that with knowledge of this. And he said that, this has happened repeatedly. He's also privy to additional information that he can't disclose to us about what happened in Sarasota. So, you know, because he learned about it, he has secrecy, you know, he's got secrecy classification. I forget exactly what they call it. But he's, you know, eligible to learn certain things that he can't disclose elsewhere. He's worked, you know, he's been on committees overseeing the CIA and others. So he has access to information. So he believes that the FBI has covered up information here. And I think that's quite clear. I mean, I know that for a fact.
What's the next step in this? What's going to happen next? So the Attorney General is going to make his decision by Friday about whether or not to release the name of this person?
Right. Well, that's one thing that's going to happen. And, you know, we're waiting for the appeal time to run to see if the FBI appeals. In our case before Judge Slock, if they do appeal, that will delay the release of this information that we're looking at. We're also trying to figure out whether we should appeal, you know, whether there's a legal reason for us to do so. And then we have another case that's currently before the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta, in which we appealed and the FBI appealed a decision by a judge in federal judge in Miami regarding records of what was called the 9/11 Review Commission. We were looking for stuff from them because they were principally charged with looking at the FBI's performance post 9/11. They also looked at new information about the attacks that had arisen since then. And one of the things they looked at was what we had reported, and they sought to discount it for reasons that don't add up. So we're trying to get the documents that would explain how they reached their conclusion in this. And, you know, we're running into stone walls everywhere, frankly.
Why do you think there's all this secrecy about 9/11? Here it is 18 years after it happened, or almost 18 years after it happened. Why do you think there's so much secrecy?
Well, that's the, you know, that's the $64,000 question here. It seems to be the only logical thing that I can come up with is that the government's protecting Saudi Arabia because of, you know, geopolitical strategic reasons. And but they're doing it at the expense of our own citizens who were killed in the attacks. I was going to say, if there might mention one other thing, Florida Bulldog has a Facebook page, and on that page, in addition to posting stuff about the stories, there is a petition that is out there that they're trying to get signatures on. This comes from the families, all right? They're trying to, you know, to put pressure on the FBI to open up records, and they're gathering signatures. So if folks want to stand with them, they can, you know, go to the Bulldog site. They'll see where this is, and they can link through to it and sign that petition.
I just got to go back and ask you about Prestancy. If this couple left mysteriously just before 9/11, and the woman in the family, had ties to high-level Saudi officials, or at least a top Saudi businessman, would the FBI routinely go in and talk to the neighbors and talk to that security guard? And, I mean, is that part of the FBI routine in a comprehensive investigation like 9/11?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, one of the most obvious things is that they would collect the gatehouse records. They would collect the photographs of the license tags. I mean, that's just the most basic kind of police work. And we were told that they did. And yet they have turned around and said that they did not collect this.
Last question. After the murder of Adnan Khashoggi, as he was going to the Saudi embassy in Turkey, some American officials have spoken strongly against Saudi Arabia, wanting them to come clean about the murder of Khashoggi. Other people in our government have been protective. What do you make of this kind of divide in our government over how toughly to treat Saudi Arabia?
Well, Well, that divide is also in the 9/11 case. I mean, you had the Senate not long ago came out with a resolution, I think it was unanimous, urging the FBI to release everything it could, you know, without betraying the confidences of, that are necessary to conducting business. And yet the FBI has taken no steps that we're aware of to release information. The people up in New York, I mean, you've got some high-powered lawyers up there. They're, you know, have subpoenaed all sorts of stuff, and the FBI is stonewalling them left and right. That's one of the reasons they need to get this decision from the Attorney General there this week, because it will affect going forward how they try and obtain further documentation.
Well, Dan, thanks for coming on WMNF. Is there anything else you'd like to point out about your long investigation into the possible Saudi connection, Saudi government connection to 9/11? Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Not really, except that we're going to stay with it as long as possible and try and see this through. And because we believe that the full story here has not been told, and it certainly appears as if Saudi Arabia had something to do with this. And it seems to me the government here should be cooperating with the families of its citizens here who were killed and injured by this.
Well, Dan Christensen, thanks a lot. FloridaBulldog.org is the website. And, Dan, thank you.
Hey, Rob, nice talking to you. Thanks for having me.
All right, good to have you here. Well, you're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa, and we're going to open up the phone lines. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. So you can comment about the interview if you want. You can also talk about some other things if there's some other issue that's come up that you'd like to mention. Here's an email from David. He says, thanks for bringing the Florida Bulldog staffer on the show to bring this information to light. And David writes, so what will Trump do? Will Trump do anything about this? Probably not, since he seems only to care about buddying up with the Saudi crown prince. Trump also wants to sell arms to the Saudis, writes David. David, thank you for that. 813-239-9663. And email address is dj@wmnf.org. This email is about yesterday's program. Let me just read this from yesterday. How come you never apologize to conservatives when you cut them off, Rob? You just keep talking over them and demanding the answer to the question that you want answered instead of letting them say what they called to say. Oh, right, because liberalism really is pathological, writes somebody who says that they're smelly. So, Smelly, thank you for that. Yesterday I got into a discussion with a guy, and he called up and made a long statement for about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and then said that he needed his AR-15 to defend himself against the government. And I asked him the question. I said, "Well, if the government has tanks and it's got, you know, airplanes like the Warthog that can fire thousands of rounds in just a matter of seconds." What defense does somebody with a single AR-15, even if it is a powerful rifle, what defense do you have if you've got an AR-15 against a tank? Or, you know, if the government steps it up and shoots at your home with a Warthog, your home is going to go down, even though it's just a bullet-firing airplane. But it fires a lot of them very fast and can cut a body in half. It's called the soldier's friend sometimes, but if it's used against you, it's not your friend. So I would say that the caller really never had an answer yesterday, and that's what I wanted. You know, he was going to try to quote the Bible as his defense, saying that that's why he needed an AR-15. I don't think the AR-15 even comes up in the Bible. Anyway, so I don't cut people off. I certainly listen to them at least for 30 seconds or a minute or sometimes 2 minutes. And then if they don't seem to be on track, if they don't seem to be very sharp or practical, then I begin to ask questions. So that's what I do. And some people don't like that. Some people like it. Again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. And We're going to take some phone calls now from listeners, and Frank Knox, or actually Carol Arenas, I think, is our phone producer right now. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. Gary, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, yeah, thanks. First of all, I want to say that as an interviewer and a talk show host, you are eminently fair and patient, even with people who are clearly spreading disinformation or attacking you and WMNF, so I've never heard anybody who handles hostile callers and unintelligent callers as well as you do, Rob. The other point is, did you talk about the AOC tweet in which she explicitly stated that everything Trump does in his presidency is to use the presidency as a cash machine?
I haven't talked about that, no.
Yeah, it's great, man. Yeah. She called him out and said, look, it was basically stimulated by how he told Pence to go and stay at a Trump property that was 3 hours away from where Trump had official meetings. And AOC is like, Trump is using the presidency as a cash machine. Everything he does is to benefit his businesses and his business allies. And that leads me to why anyone still supports Trump. Now, you've had Chris Hedges on before, haven't you?
Yeah.
Right, and Hedges has right now on YouTube this talk called American Anomie, in which he explains quite vividly how Trump is a cult leader, that Trump's followers have been brought into this cult, and just how dangerous it is. And as we know, Hedges is a Pulitzer Prize winner and a war correspondent. This isn't some lunatic theory. It's on YouTube. It's worth a listen. All of you out there who still in any way support Trump, whether it's because you hated Hillary or whatever, you really have to understand that you're in a cult, Trump is dangerous, and it's time to abandon him.
Well, Gary, I know that's the way you feel, but if you talk to Trump people, they don't feel like they're in a cult. I mean, I know a whole lot of
fingers of being in a cult is that you don't know you're in one. You believe you don't know it, and the cult leader is very smart about just the Trump statements that are so obviously cult-like, that are things are very broken, and I am the only one who can fix them. Stuff like that. So the Trump supporters are deluded, and willfully so, and they've been conned by a master propagandist.
I urge
them to just consider that, not just to write it off. I'm not a member of the lunatic left. I actually share some like views that might go along with some of the things Trump believes in. I have an open mind and I'm rational, but I don't hear that from Trump supporters.
Well, let's invite the Trump supporters to call in. And our phone number is 813-239-9663. Gary, I would just say, though, I do think it is interesting. The president, as he was leaving France last week, said that his Doral resort in Miami would be a great place for the next G7 summit meeting. And he seems to do this conflict of interest thing out in the open. And you're right, he did suggest to the Vice President Pence that he stay at his golf resort this week. And Pence said that's the reason he was staying there. He said that no other place in that town, I think it's Doonesburg or Doonesbury, no other town in that city could accommodate all his people, his security people and his staff. But I do think you could make a really strong case that there is a conflict of interest when the president is profiting. He's not giving a discount rate to any of these people, whether it's the Secret Service or Vice President Pence or the G7 leaders. He's not giving them a discount. So there is a case to be made that he's profiting from his presidency and his influence.
Violations of the Emoluments Clause are just ripe. And he does the same thing whenever he goes to his golf resorts. The Secret Service agents and all the other hangers-on are also paying the going rate to him. He was supposed to have absolutely and totally divested.
So why do you think that people don't like corruption, and there's people that don't like corruption in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, the Libertarian Party and the Greens, why do you think the people that don't like corruption in the Republican Party aren't speaking out?
Well, I hear some of them, they're absolutely terrified that if they go against Trump, they'll be voted out. Others are in bed with him. And also I want to point out that AOC pointed out that it's also people like Betsy DeVos who he's appointed. she profits from her policies of catering to the for-profit college industry, the charter school industry, and the student loan industry. Like, Trump is just the leader of a gang of people that are using their government positions to benefit themselves and their own financial interests. Now, we already know that there's a revolving door between the Pentagon and the defense contractors, et cetera, but it's just gotten to the point where it should be obvious to everyone.
All right.
Trump is a businessman first, and if he's a patriot at all, which I don't think he is, that's far second.
All right. Well, Gary, thanks a lot. Thanks for your views. All right. So you heard Gary's views. He challenged the Trump supporters. If you're a Trump supporter, if you want to talk back to what Gary said, call us up, 813-239-9663, and we'll take everybody, too, who's listening. If you're a Democrat, if you're an independent, if you're a Green or a Libertarian or a Republican or a hardcore conservative who's upset with the Republican Party, call us up, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Augie in Sarasota. Hi, Augie. What's up?
Hi, Ron. I'll tell you, the ironies are all over the place on the corruption emoluments issue that Gary talked about so well. But the thing about it, of all of this, is that 1979 was a big year for two things. One, the taking of the hostages of the American embassy by the Iranians and releasing them ultimately unharmed. And two, the taking over of Mecca by the Wahhabis, the Salafi, the Sharia enforcers. And so from this time forward, Saudi went from being moderately conservative to something that's extremely dangerous. And 9/11, I think this is probably the perfect example. But the thing that's really disturbing to me is to know that our president made his first visit to a foreign country. And where was it? Saudi Arabia did the sword dance with Bin Salman. I think, Rob, this thing is bringing someone in to talk about the cover-up of the FBI and the silencing of interest for the general public. We go out of our way to silence people that are going to tell the truth. But we silence our own people who were, it's their job to find out the truth, the FBI. But Julian Assange is a good example. We're going to prosecute the hell out of them for telling the truth about innocent people being murdered in Iraq, machine guns, things like that. This thing is, we really are in a mess, and everybody knows that. And we've got a leader who just keeps waving the wand, and people keep jumping through the tune. It's difficult for people out in the hinterland who have to talk to one another as fellow Americans, because if you get slightly off the subject, then you're down to, Antifas, equating the Antifas with the Klan, which is really an amazing comparison. So definitions need to come into order, come into place, Rob. And that is your job. I know as a former host of shows and so forth, it's the job of the coach to educate the people about things they normally don't know. And just as one case in point, you have a host in your station who is the Palestinian. And I interviewed her twice on a television show. And when I tried to discuss the Wahhabis and the Salafis with her, he's threatened to walk off the show. So the Arabs and the others, the Islamists and so forth, are afraid of what comes out of Saudi Arabia, as what happened to Khashoggi. They know how far they will go. They murdered Shia Muslims just recently, 37, crucified one. They do this, that's the second one in the last 2 months. Group in the last
year. Well, there's no, I'm not going to criticize another host, but there's no doubt that Saudi Arabia has the worst human rights record of any of the U.S. Allies that President Trump has visited. And it is shocking that would be the first place he would go. And I promise, Augie, we have not let loose of the Saudi topic, and we'll continue to do it. I promise.
No, they operate very much like the Nazis did before World War II. There was a thing called the Bund, and there were very innocent people out there promoting the whole thing. So I think, Rob, it might be instructive for you to do this, to have read the 24 rules of Sharia, and the last one is the most important one. called Taqiya. And it says, you must lie to promote Islam. Now, if that's enforced, you get things like what happened to Khashoggi. So the fear that's out there for ordinary folk who are honest, good Muslims, and of course we know the two differences, I hope, between the Shia and the Sunni. The one is there are no women with rights in the Sunni and women with full rights in the Shia. So this education is not taking place enough. That's my recommendation to you.
All right, Augie, thanks a lot. I am certainly not a scholar of the Muslim religion, and I think I'll leave it up to other programs to talk about the sometimes tough things that are said in the religious texts. I think you can go through every religion and find odd or harsh things said in religious texts. So the question is that the general practice of the people that hold that religion? If it is a general practice, then there's a problem. I would say that I think that every person of the Muslim faith that I've met is certainly honest and peaceful. So I'm not going to buy into that. The last thing where Augie was suggesting that lying is okay in the faith. Again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. Peter writes this regarding an AR-15 and whether it can be used to fight against your government. Peter says, you get a real-world example in regards to the question of defending oneself with an AR-15 against the U.S. government. Just look at Uday and Qusay Hussein, Saddam Hussein's sons. They had a stockpile of automatic rifles, but they were pulverized in a matter of seconds, writes Peter. So, Peter, thank you for that. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. That's the number to call. And we're going to go back to the phones with Steve, who's a Trump supporter who's driving. Hi, Steve. Did you hear Gary's call?
Yeah.
Okay. What would you like to say?
I can hardly hear, but are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. We can hear you.
Yeah, I'm ready.
So what'd you think of Gary's call? Yeah, what'd you think of Gary's call?
I think that he's got a really interesting program. He seems to be pretty objective. But he wants to know why a person would support Trump. I'll give it to him.
Well, you're live on the air, Steve. So I was just asking you, what do you think of Gary's call?
I think it's fine. Your show is very entertaining and very intellectual, and I really appreciate your show. But you asked the question, why is a person in favor of Trump? I'm in favor of Trump because I don't believe in socialism. I don't accept it. I believe in capitalism. I think my son's a typical millennial. He will not support Trump because Trump is pretty arrogant. I agree with that. But overall, people support Trump because they're against abortion. They want a conservative Supreme Court. There's a lot of reasons. We don't want same-day registration and illegal people voting. Gavin Newsom in California, give me a break. You're not supposed to help policemen in emergencies. I think that's wacko. I just think it's wacko. It doesn't make any sense.
All right. Well, Steve, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. All right. So you heard Steve. He doesn't believe in socialism. His son is a millennial, a typical millennial, and he doesn't like Trump. But Steve is against abortion. He wants a conservative Supreme Court. He criticized Gavin Newsom in California for, and I'm not sure if Gavin actually said this, but he said, don't help police officers. I'll have to fact check that, and I'll see if I got a second to do that. I had not heard that. But this question of socialism, too, that seems to be a strong one. Do you think, let me ask you right now, do you think that the U.S. has any degree of socialism in it? And if so, what percent of the American economy do you think already is socialist? Doesn't go by that name, of course. But if you say, let's say that socialism, and just let's use this description of it, which seems to be the Republican description of it, when the government runs something, that's socialism. Now, that may not be what socialist scholars call socialism, but if the government is running something And you do have a vote. So if you've got a school board or a library or a highway, you get to vote for the governor that helps build the highways. You get to vote for the school board that helps control the schools. You vote for the county commissioners or the city council people that fund the libraries. You vote for the mayor who signs off on the funding. But what percent of our economy right now do you think is government run, and what percent do you think is just privately run? And do we need that public sector? If the Republican definition of socialism is anything the government does, what percent of our lives are affected by government? I mean, I'm thinking of sewers, and I'm thinking of the water that comes out of your tap. I'm thinking of the air that you breathe that's cleaner today than it was back in 1967. What do you think? How much socialism do we already have? And is that an acceptable amount? Could you stand more or do you want less? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Gary in Clearwater. I hope it's not the same Gary. Gary, you're on. What would you like to say?
I know there's a bunch of Garys.
Okay, there's more Garys than one. Thank you, Gary. What would you like to say?
I would like to say that tonight, starting at 5 o'clock on MSNBC, there's 10 Democrats running for president are going to be talking about climate change. So I want everybody to pay attention to this and turn on MSNBC tonight. Okay, thank you.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call. I'm sure MSNBC thanks you, too, for that heads up. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Nancy in St. Pete. Nancy, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. Hi. Wow, you're really covering the waterfront today, aren't you? Yeah. Okay. As for socialism and capitalism, as though they're, diametrically opposed to one another, I suppose they are. You can't have a democracy with capitalism, apparently. It didn't used to be that way, but I think that the whole argument is well above our heads, our pay grades, and of course we need socialism. We need Democrats. We need Democrats because Democrats are the ones that come in to take up the slack where the capitalists have run all over everybody and made everybody very poor and not being able to buy stuff, which, it keeps capitalists going. So they really kind of need each other. And as for this thing with the Muslims, I read a book a long time ago called Constantine's Sword, and it had to do with all the religions coming from the God of Abraham. And they have since day one been fighting each other, and now we take it as proxy. They use it for proxy wars, and they pit everybody against each other. And we don't, if we didn't have this outside stuff happening, telling us to hate a different religion, we wouldn't have these wars. But we would have these wars. It's just that they're being, fought under the name of God in making us hate each other. So that's all I got to say. And I know I didn't say it right, but.
No, it was fine.
Anyway,
it was
everybody.
All right, Nancy, it was fine. Thank you for the call. I wonder about capitalism being democratic because, if you've ever worked for a private business, let's say it's a small business, the owner at that small business has a tremendous amount of power at any small business. So is capitalism democratic? What do you think? If you've worked for a company and you buck the rules of the company, how much say do you as an employee have in that company, in that private company? And would you say that capitalism is democratic? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Here's an email from 239. It's unsigned. It says, "Your caller Gary makes very salient and succinct points. We could quibble over the definition of cult versus religion and that dishonest Donald has worshipers rather than supporters, but his appeal, Gary's appeal, for the afflicted to help to seek help, and deprogramming is much appreciated by this writer, and he's in the 239 area code, but he's unsigned, or maybe it's she is unsigned. Let's go to the person who's been holding the longest, and it looks like a Jim in St. Pete. Jim, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. I just wanted to say a quick rebuke to anyone you speak to who says that they don't believe in or trust socialism. Is ask them if they trust the Army. Ask them if they believe in the Navy, because there's probably no more socialist institution in this country than our military. Aside from the equipment that they buy from private corporations, they are not mercenaries. They are paid with tax dollars. And, you know, you go from there. You ask them if they believe in and trust in the police, the fire department. Then you move on to telling them how much of our economy is supported by tax dollars, how many contracts, how many private corporations, you know, depend upon subsidies and tax breaks and incentives from local, federal, state governments.
Yeah, those are all good questions. Jim, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. All right. What percent of our economy do you think is already socialist based on the Republicans' own definition? And that is that if it's government run. 813-239-9663. We could argue about what traditional socialist scholars think about the military, though, because I think what socialist scholars want is democracy in the workplace. And so there's not much democracy in the Army or Navy. I can guarantee you that. Terry writes this regarding Vice President Pence's trip, he says, besides Trump profiting from it, we the taxpayers have to pay for the extra expense of transporting his entourage using a combination of motorcade and airplane. So Terry kind of objecting to that. Ernie's in Port Richey says, obviously, an infantryman's rifle is no defense against an armored vehicle. The answer to the question is in Afghanistan, where the most powerful military in the world cannot defeat a determined guerrilla army. It also applies to our war in Vietnam, writes Ernie in Port Richey. Well, that is a good point. The U.S. did not win in Vietnam. It had to withdraw after it lost the war, and the folks on the other side were had not nearly the amount of military equipment that our U.S. forces had. That's a good point. Let's go to Liza in St. Pete. Liza, you're on WMNF.
Hi, good to hear from you today.
Well, it's good to hear from you.
I was in the car and heard that gentleman talk about Trump being like a cult.
Yeah, that was his claim, yeah.
I never thought about that before, but in my personal experience in my 20s, I got sucked into a born-again Christian church for 6.5 years on Cape Cod. I didn't know I was in a group that was under mind control. You cannot talk to people when they're in a place where they cannot rationalize. So I've known many people to leave this church. And basically what I'm saying is it really hit a button and triggered me when he said that, because when you see people's eyes glaze over and they start defending what they believe in and you can tell they're not being rational, that's exactly what I experienced in my 20s and saw about 300 people come out of that group. Now they go, oh my gosh, can we believe we listen to that guy? But when they're in it, they don't call it deprogramming, they call it thought reform now.
Yeah, but Liza, in fairness, I know a lot of Republicans, they don't think they're in a cult. I think they just think that they've got the winning guy, and they like to be on the winning team, and they didn't like Obama for 8 years, so they give President Trump a pass for a lot of things that they might otherwise object to if it was a Democrat doing it.
Similarly, when I was in the group, we'll call it, when you're talking to somebody and they can no longer digest what you're saying, they're not actually even grasping criticism of their leader, that's similar. I see it the same. I was under it, but I think there's a point there about mind control. I don't actually call it a cult, but where their mind is not actually rationalizing anymore. They're defending. It's a defense mode. But the other thing I wanted to say about the socialism and capitalism, from my understanding, capitalism is supposed to put people like on a fair level playing field. And I think we know that so much of our government contract, military spending and things is not based on being fair. All I have to say is like Halliburton, I know somebody who says, I have to spend my government budget by the end of the year and blow it away in November or December. I know I'm not getting the money next year. That is not fiscal responsibility. So I wish that conservatism or people that believe in conservatism would tighten the reins like we do in our households with money. And I think you know what I mean about just wasting part of our budget.
All right, Liza, thanks a lot. Hey, by the way, how do you think people get out of the cult? What's the best way to get out of a cult?
What I found, I left in 1990. People finally leave when they're personally hurt. The leadership does something to them. They personally get hurt or they're shocked by something. So if everything's going peacefully, they just stay the same.
All right, Liza, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I think Adam Smith would agree with Liza. Adam Smith, who I think a lot of conservatives point to, is the number one free market writer in history. And what Adam Smith, I think, would argue is that there should be fairness between competitors and there should be transparency between competitors. And Adam Smith had a lot to say about how capitalism would go wrong, too. I don't think he envisioned the kind of capitalism we have today. Kevin writes this, anybody wants to use the Bible to justify the violence that AR-15s are causing is the worst kind of hypocrite. Using religion is in this way is not how true Christians are supposed to act. Kevin replying to one of our callers from yesterday. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And let's go to Ed in Carrollwood, who wants to talk about socialism. Ed, you're on.
Hi, how are you? So from my perspective, I just want to give, for someone that comes from a socialist communist country originally, what people are cynically saying is, and confusing the message, Medicare, the military that the gentleman mentioned earlier, those are all examples of socialism, calling the police, fire. So we already do some form of socialism. What the right is cynically confusing people by saying socialism and comparing it to Venezuela or Cuba, which there, every single business is owned by the government and everyone is an employee of the government. There is no private ownership. That's a completely different animal than what people on the left are trying to say we should have more socialism. That's my comment.
Yeah, and Ed, what country did you come from?
Originally from Cuba.
From Cuba. All right. Ed, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. And here's an email from the 813 area code, unsigned again. It says, Social Security and Medicare are examples of socialism. Police and fire rescue are socialism. Those chumps are brain damaged, writes 813. Now, let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to John in Port Richey. John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Well, there's a lot to say, Rob, so I'll try to be quick. I would like to hear the guy's comment about the David and Goliath. I wish we were letting him talk on that. But about socialism, something else there. I bet you any conservative that's in line for a kidney transplant would be totally against the free market, where that kidney would go to the highest bidder. They would be thankful for socialism. Another thing about the free market that I thought was interesting, isn't one of the principles behind the free market is that the people will hold companies accountable, so therefore they'll do the right thing? So why are the Republicans against the boycott the best movement in some country like Israel or against some companies? That to me sounds like that's anti-market. And the third thing is just a quick observation. Cognitive disconnect. It seems to me that there seems to be more among the conservative minds than the liberal minds, and that's just an observation. An example would be Trump. When he went to Canada, he said, oh, we have a trade imbalance with Canada. They're sending more stuff to us than we're sending to them. Total lie. But no one will admit that. He even admitted that at a meeting that he had, some speech he said. He said, I didn't know that when I made the comment. I was just saying stuff to the prime minister. The other one, you had a caller call up once and said, dumb, dumb Biden with his gas, but he loves Trump. What about Trump's gas, like Washington having control of the Air Force? That's a cognitive disconnect to me. Thanks.
All right, John, thanks a lot. He really ate up the last of the show, too. Suzanne writes this regarding the Democratic candidates on climate change. She says, correction, it's on CNN starting at 5, not on MSNBC. Well, if you want to comment about today's program, call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for NOLA. He's on the Midpoint program coming up in the next hour. We'll get the news from NPR in just a moment. And thanks to Carol Arenas for being our phone producer today. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for listening. This is 88.5 FM. WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, and you've been listening to the Radioactivity program. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for the latest news from NPR.